News of the Times, Sinister Saturdays, The Croydon Killer. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1907 in Croydon, and an unbelievable tale unfolds that is partly tragic, partly a grim tableau of murderous missteps. Richard Brinkley, a 54-year-old carpenter, has been lodging at wealthy widow Mrs. Bloom's house. Shortly after his stay there, she dies and quite surprisingly leaves all her considerable wealth to him rather than to her daughter, with whom she was in good terms and had only visited 4 days before her unexpected death. The daughter contests the will, and this begins the series of tragedies. Brinkley, in something of a panic, seems not to have taken into account this possible outcome. He offers to marry the half his age daughter so they can share the wealth. She declines. Knowing that the witnesses of the questionable will had not realized that they were witnessing a will, but rather thought they were signing up for a pleasure trip, Brinkley is aware that it is only a matter of time before he is caught. His solution is to kill the witnesses who had signed the will. This plan goes badly wrong, with two unintended victims and a third who escapes death and recovers. The two intended victims, the witnesses of Mrs. Bloom's will, remain unscathed. With police brought in, this twisted tale of greed and murder unfolds, with Brinkley now being suspected of other victims as his house of poisonous mixtures is investigated. Brinkley, seeing that things are not going well, seems to believe that his tenuous relationship with the local Masonic Lodge will help him escape justice. We take a look at this twisted, dark, murderous tale of the Croydon Killer in today's episode of Sinister Saturdays. We hope you enjoy the show. The background. Richard Brinkley, around 54 years of age and working as a carpenter, is in search for a way to make some money. He hits upon the idea of killing wealthy widow Mrs. Bloom, sometimes referred to as Miss Bloomsbury, in her business holdings. Mrs. Bloom's large house only had herself and her granddaughter living there. She had plenty of space. With excessive charm applied by Richard Brinkley, Mrs. Bloom allows him to lodge with her against her family's wishes. Whilst there, Brinkley is highly attentive to Mrs. Bloom and is known to peck her on the cheek whenever he leaves the house. Mrs. Bloom, placing her trust in Brinkley, reveals her extensive assets and business holdings. A few weeks later, Brinkley proposes an outing that he is allegedly organising for several people. He asks her to sign up for the event, which she excitedly does. Without knowing it, she has just signed her name to her own new will, written by Brinkley. A will requires two witnesses to confirm that they have seen the person whose will it is signing their will. This, of course, does not work for Brinkley. Instead, he goes to two people he knows and has them sign what they think is for a group outing, but which in fact is Mrs. Bloom's will. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, the 27th of April 1907, Croydon Poison Mystery, Brinkley and his late landlady. It appears that some time ago, Brinkley approached Miss Bloomsbury for lodgings. The old lady was living with a granddaughter, Miss Granville. The father of the young woman objected to Miss Bloomsbury taking in a lodger. 3 days before her death, she made a will in Brinkley's favour, and she died suddenly. She had risen in the morning, apparently in the best of health, and later in the day was found dead. The circumstances were sufficiently curious to justify an inquest, but after a post-mortem examination had been made, a verdict of death from natural causes was returned. The will. Mrs. Bloom's estate is considerable. Brinkley quickly starts to work to sell off furniture and liquidate her assets. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, 27th of April, 1907, Croydon Poison Mystery. In the days before he was left a fortune by the maiden lady with whom he lodged at Maxwell Road, Fulham, Brinkley earned, it is said, his living as a carpenter. Since the death of his benefactress, he does not appear to have had much to do. He has continued to reside alone at the address mentioned, and the house, when searched by the police, was found to be in a neglected condition. Brinkley is well known in Fulham, having resided in one place and another in the district for upwards of 20 years. Under the will of Joanna Bloom, Brinkley was left her house at 4 Maxwell Street, Fulham, her property in Consols, her savings to the amount of about £180, and her furniture, some of which is very handsome and valuable. This good fortune came to Brinkley after he had been acquainted with the pretty old lady of Maxwell Street, as she used to be called by her neighbours, for a few weeks. Inquiries do not suggest that Mrs. Bloom was eccentric, and her relatives were rather surprised by the fondness she showed for Brinkley, who went to the house in the capacity of a lodger. He used to kiss Mrs. Bloom on the cheek before he went out, and she confided in him in regard to all her business affairs. It may be stated that Mrs. Bloom carried on business in the name of Bloomsbury, and this is the name which appears in the lease having reference to the house. She was of German extraction, and in her husband's lifetime resided at Cadogan Terrace, long since demolished. She had been in Maxwell Street upwards of 20 years, and always attracted notice by her pretty hair and pleasant face when she was out walking with her granddaughter, her sole companion. Unexpectedly to Brinkley, Mrs. Bloom's daughter contests the will. As evidence is gathered for the impending court case, Brinkley realises he will be found out with the two witnesses of Mrs. Bloom's will, who were not actually witnessed. His first idea is to try to marry the daughter and offer to split the estate with her. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, 27th of April, 1907, Croydon Poison Mystery, Daughter's Story. This daughter, Miss Bloom, was surprised at the contents of the will, as her mother had always shown the warmest regards for her, and only 4 days before her death had visited her at Pimlico. "Mother was here on the Thursday," said Miss Bloom to an Evening News representative, "and seemed unusually bright. I went with her to the tram and remarked how well she was walking. She said, 'Yes, very well today.' I had always asked my niece, who resided with her, to let me know if she was ill, so that I could go to her. I felt rather hurt because, although she died at 11 o'clock on Monday morning, I did not receive the telegram till the evening. My mother had not been fully dressed when she died, but the body was laid out when I saw it." Brinkley was in the house, and I was looking round and noticing some papers relating to the investments in Consols, when he said, "None of that is coming to you." I afterwards learnt that by a will dated the 16th of December, everything was left to Brinkley, and I have instructed a solicitor to take steps to oppose the granting of probate. This is the only thing I have relating to my mother, except her portrait, said Miss Bloom, producing the funeral card, edged with deep black and folded over. An offer of marriage. Mr. Brinkley called me afterwards and said that he did not want the money as he was well off. He asked me whether it was true, as my mother had told him, that I made 200 or 300 pounds a year out of lettings, and whether the house was my own. Afterwards, he asked me to find room for him as a lodger. I said I had no room and could not turn out those who were paying their way. Within a month of the funeral, Mr. Brinkley asked me to marry him, saying that it had been my mother's wish, and that then her property could be divided. I said I could not think of such a thing, as he was a stranger. With the daughter of Miss Bloom declining his marriage proposal, and with her wish to pursue the contesting of the will, Brinkley comes up with a new plan. He will kill the witnesses, thereby forcing the courts to acknowledge the will in his favour as valid. He starts with Reginald Parker. Mr. Parker, who resides in the same house as the Becks, wishes to sell his bulldog. Brinkley claims interest in buying his dog and sets up a meeting to discuss the dog. He brings with him a bottle of stout. Upon his arrival with Parker, he pulls out the bottle of stout, expounding repeatedly about its purported health benefits. Parker declines at the time to try the stout, but promises to try it later. Brinkley leaves it there for him, where it remains in the sitting room on a table. Parker departs, as does Brinkley, but the stout remains on the table. Mr. and Mrs. Beck and their daughter arrive back from their various different jobs and have a chat with their lodger, Mr. Parker, with whom they are in good terms. Seeing the stout on the table, they all decide to give it a go, except for Mr. Parker, who doesn't drink alcohol. Mr. Beck imbibes about half a tumbler, Mrs. Beck somewhat less, and the daughter, Daisy, only tries a tablespoonful. The reaction is almost immediate. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, 4th of May, 1907, Croydon Poisoning Mystery, Daisy Beck's Evidence. Daisy Kathleen Beck said that she was a dressmaker and was now living at 199 St. James's Road in Croydon. She confirmed that in April she was living with her mother and father at 32 Churchill Road, and that Reginald Parker came to live there as well as a lodger. On the fateful day when she returned at 5 o'clock, she saw that Parker had a bulldog that he chained to the inside of the door. A bit later, her father returned home. They could see on a table in the sitting room a bottle of stout and two glasses. Mr. Parker and Mr. and Mrs. Beck were sitting together and chatting. Daisy was about to go to bed when she was invited to try some of the stout, which she accepted. They all tried the stout, remarking how bitter it was. Her father drank half a glass, whilst her mother had a little less. She had only about a spoonful. She saw her parents collapse and remembers not much after being taken ill herself. Her sister Hilda testifies, confirming much from what she saw of Daisy's story. The crime. April 1907, Croydon, and there is much consternation upon the news of the poisoning of Mr. and Mrs. Beck and their 21-year-old daughter, Daisy, apparently by a bottle of stout. Mr. and Mrs. Beck are found lying in the kitchen, fully clothed and beyond medical help. Daisy Beck, the daughter, is taken to the hospital, where she eventually makes a full recovery. As she survives, she's able to give a complete description to the police of the events. The family seem to have no known enemies, but the stout that they drank from was not intended for them. It was intended for their good friend and lodger, Reginald Parker. From here, the police are quickly able to pinpoint their primary suspect, Richard Brinkley. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, 27th of April, 1907, Croydon poison mystery, two deaths, Fulham man charged with murder. Considerable consternation prevailed in South Croydon on Sunday morning when it was found that Mr. and Mrs. Beck of 32 Churchill Road had been found dead in their house, while their daughter, Miss Daisy Beck, aged 21, had been taken to Croydon General Hospital. Various rumours were speedily communicated, which soon got abroad as to the cause of the tragedy, and it soon became apparent that they had been poisoned as a result of drinking some stout. The police were speedily communicated with, and under the direction of Detective Inspector Fowler and Detective Sergeant Easter, inquiries were made, with the result that those two officers went to Maxwell Road, Fulham, on Sunday and effected an arrest in the person of Richard Brinkley. He was conveyed to the Croydon police station and on Monday was brought before the magistrate sitting at the borough bench. The prisoner, who was described as a carpenter and whose age was given as 53, is a man of medium build with a sallow complexion and a prominent nose. He was respectively dressed, wearing a tweed overcoat and a soft tweed hat, something of the Trilby shape. Throughout the proceedings, he appeared to be very nervous, but looked straight at the bench and evidently took a keen interest in the evidence which was given. The charge against him was one of feloniously killing Richard Beck and Anne Elizabeth Beck by administering a noxious drug or poison to them. He was also charged with attempting to murder Daisy Kathleen Beck and Reginald Clifford Parker by administering a noxious drug or poison to them. As Brinkley is remanded and investigators gather evidence and look into his antecedents, questions arise as to the death of the widow, Mrs. Bloom. Her body is exhumed, but no trace of poison is found. Her daughter remains unconvinced, as do the press in general, despite the medical testimony. The inquest regarding Brinkley, however, is conclusive, and Brinkley will be remanded for trial. As Brinkley awaits his court date, he attempts to call upon his dubious ties with the local Masonic Lodge, hoping that someone there will come to help him. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, 25th of May, 1907, Croydon poison mystery. A strange incident in Brinkley's career is his association with Freemasonry. Among the portraits which has been distributed amongst his friends is one which shows him decked out in a remarkable array of Masonic jewels and other insignia. He is shown as wearing the jewel of the past master and the provincial grandmaster, and many other marks indicating, if true, considerable donations and benefactions and long association with the craft. The fact is, Brinkley has no right to wear any of the regalia in which he was photographed. He is a Mason of a few years' standing, without rank or special claim to the regards of his fellow Masons. Mr. H. E. Francis of Cowley Road in Brixton is the secretary of the Claremont Lodge, Croydon, which Brinkley belongs. "I authorise you to say," said Mr. Francis, Saturday, to a Lloyd's representative, "that Brinkley has no right to wear those jewels. He is entitled to wear only a simple apron. No one in his lodge is entitled to wear them. I am sure he has not borrowed the articles. No mason would lend them for such a purpose. He may have purchased them, or he may have got them by other means. Brinkley joined the Claremont Lodge on the introduction of a member of good standing to whom he was introduced by a fellow mason. He paid his first subscription in November 1903 and paid regularly for several years, but has not yet paid his subscription for 1906. If it were now offered, it would be refused in consequence of the use he has made of borrowed plumes, and at the end of the year he would cease to be a mason. Brinkley is upset by the rebuff and clearly believed he might have been able to get out of the predicament which he finds himself in by calling on the Brotherhood. He was wrong. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, 15th of June 1907, Croydon Poison Mystery. Strange letter from Brinkley. His Masonic career, renewed declaration of innocence. Richard Brinkley, who is in Brixton Prison awaiting trial in connection with the Croydon Poison Mystery, is indignant that any doubt should have been cast upon his right to wear the Masonic clothing which he appeared in a photograph which was published in many papers. That Brinkley gained admission into a Masonic lodge cannot be denied, but the records of Masonry show that he had no title either to wear the clothing or the jewels in which he was photographed. Indeed, he would have had to have been associated with the craft for a long term of years to have acquired the emblem of rank and distinction he so inelegantly wore, while the jewels with which he was decorated must have involved him in great expense, extended over an equally lengthy period. A remarkable letter. Brinkley took little part in the affairs of the Claremont Lodge, and of matters relating to the craft in general, he has but slight knowledge. By what means he came into a possession of the collar, apron, and jewels in which he appears in the photograph is not known, and so far the insignia has not been traced. Mr. Francis's repudiation of Brinkley in such remarkable Masonic attire has evidently nettled the accused man. He has written from Brixton Prison to Mr. Francis seeking to justify his conduct in a letter as remarkable as the spelling is novel. The closing sentences of the epistle consist of an attack upon one of the witnesses at the preliminary proceedings in the police court and before the coroner. But as the case is sub judice, it has been necessary to omit these from our reproduction of the document. Brinkley's letter is as follows. Dear Sir and Brother, I was rather surprised to hear of you giving me a kick, because you thought I was down. According to promise, I have only dressed in my dear father's clothes, which I have saved for years and thought I could wear as my own, and my father's as they were on his own. I have done nothing to disgrace the cause yet, nor yet my promise to you and brothers, and with the help of God and a little money and hearty good wishes, I can prove it is a pack of lies for money. I never hindered a living soul yet, and never was at Croydon on the Saturday. Yours in unity, Richard Brinkley, VB. Brinkley is on his own upon the start of the trial. The evidence is already highly damning. Further witnesses are called in to confirm his obtaining the prussic acid, as well as being placed in a lineup of 10 men and being identified immediately by the boy who served him in his purchase of a bottle of stout. From the Croydon Guardian and Surrey County Gazette, the 1st of June 1907, Croydon Poison Mystery. Brinkley committed for trial. After a hearing extending over 7 days, Richard Brinkley, 53, a carpenter of 4 Maxwell Road, Fulham, has been fully committed for trial by the Croydon magistrates on all charges of murdering Mr. and Mrs. Beck, 32 Churchill Road, South Croydon, by administering a noxious drug or poison to them in a bottle of stout on the night of April the 20th, and further with attempting to murder Miss Daisy Kathleen Beck and Reginald Clifford Parker. The case has aroused considerable interest, and no less than 37 witnesses have given evidence at the police court. During the progress of the case, rumours have naturally been numerous, and some have turned out to be correct and others incorrect. The most startling of them was that Mrs. Bloom had also been poisoned. The body was exhumed and certain organs were examined by experts, but from the way in which Tuesday's evidence went, it would appear that there is no adequate foundation to support the theory that she was poisoned, and that no further charge will be preferred against Brinkley, at any rate so far as that lady's death is concerned. The cause of death. Dr. George Gilbert Genge, police divisional surgeon, stated that he was called to 32 Churchill Road, South Croydon, on the early morning of April the 21st. He proceeded to repeat the evidence he gave at the inquest with regard to making a post-mortem examination. His opinion was that Mr. and Mrs. Beck died from prussic acid poisoning. The purchasing of the stout. John Holden, aged 15, of 6 Church Road, said on Saturdays he worked for Mrs. Hardston, who had an off-licence at 16 Brighton Road. On Saturday evening, he was in the shop at about 7:30 when a man came in and asked for a bottle of oatmeal stout. He got the bottle from the shelf and handed it to Mrs. Hardston, who stamped it and asked where it was going. The man replied, "Round the corner." She then told him that he would have to pay 2p for it. The man then left the shop without the stout, but returned about 30 minutes afterwards and bought a bottle. Witness stated that that morning he had picked the prisoner out from 10 other men. He had no doubt about the man he picked out. How Brinkley was arrested. Detective Inspector Fowler said, "Yesterday morning, in consequence of information I received, I made inquiries in company with Detective Sergeant Easter. I subsequently went to Maxwell Road, Fulham, at 12 o'clock last night. I saw the prisoner as he was about to enter number 4. I went in after him and I said, 'I believe you are Mr. Brinkley.' He said, 'Yes.' I said, 'We are police officers and I shall arrest you for administering a noxious drug or poison in a bottle of stout to Reginald Parker at Croydon last night with intent to murder him.' He said, 'Well, I'm sugared.' I then cautioned him that anything he might say could be used in evidence against him. He said, 'I was not at Croydon last night.' I said, 'You will also probably be charged with the murder of Mr. and Mrs. Beck, who have died as a result of the drug or poison administered.' He said, 'Well, I'm sugared. This is very awkward, isn't it?' I said, 'I shall take you to Fulham Police Station, where you will be detained.' On the way there, he said, 'I have not seen Parker for 3 weeks. I have just left his mother and wife and have come from Water Lane. We have been enjoying ourselves.' Whilst being searched at Fulham Police Station, he said, 'Can't I send to my lodge? You are not going to keep me all night, are you?' I said, 'Yes.' He said, 'This is Parker playing a trick on me.' At 5 o'clock this morning, I conveyed him from Fulham Police Station to Croydon, and just after we go out of Fulham Station, he said, "Does Parker say I done it?" I said, "You will remember that I cautioned you." He said, "Yes, but they won't believe him. He is spiteful towards everyone if they speak to his wife. His mother and wife are beautiful people, but they won't have him in there. I have got a good character, and I am a teetotaler. If anyone says I bought the beer, they have got to prove it." He was charged, and when it was read over to him, he made no reply. He was subsequently placed with 9 others for identification and was identified by the witness, Holden. There was no hesitation. On several occasions, when asked if he had any questions to put, prisoner shook his head and drew his hand across his throat. That was said to be a Masonic sign. The hope that the Masons would save him was all for naught, as they were quite clear they wanted nothing to do with him. The evidence is overwhelming, and it takes the jury less than an hour to convict him. From the Somerset Guardian and Radstock Observer, the 27th of July, 1907, the trial of Brinkley, sentence of death. The last day of the trial of Richard Brinkley for poisoning Mr. and Mrs. Beck at Croydon was entered upon on Thursday at Guildford Assize. Counsel for the Crown submitted to the jury that it had been proved conclusively that the will made in the prisoner's favour by Mrs. Bloom was forged by the accused. There was absolutely no corroboration of Brinkley's alibi, while Parker, the principal witness for the prosecution, was corroborated at every point. Counsel for the defence contended that satisfactory evidence had been given to prove that Brinkley was not at Croydon on the fatal night. The judge, in summing up, which lasted an hour and a half, laid emphasis upon the prisoner not calling witnesses to prove his alibi and the signature of the will. The jury were absent for 50 minutes considering their verdict. They found the prisoner guilty. Asked if he had anything to say, Brinkley shook his head and in a faint voice said, "I am not guilty." The judge passed sentence of death without any comment. Brinkley did the standard appeal for commutation, which was summarily rejected. He continued throughout his time in prison, awaiting his execution, to forcibly protest his innocence. There did not seem to be any doubt at all about his guilt. Richard Brinkley was executed within the walls of Wandsworth Prison on the 17th of August, 1907. That concludes this episode of Sinister Saturdays, The Croydon Killer. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.